Welcome to the very first episode of the Fredcast. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this very first episode of the Fredcast, I'm going to spend a little bit of time at the beginning of the show introducing you to the Fredcast, letting you know what it is we're going to talk about from week to week. Then, it's time for the news. Not just racing news, but a lot of different news, product news, quirky stuff, anything that has to do with bikes from around the world. Following that, I'm going to bring you a review of a website that I found that's been pretty helpful to me as I've been riding indoors during this off-season. And finally, I have a product review of the Garmin Forerunner, the GPS training device that you can put on your handlebars that'll give you a lot of information that your normal cycle computer won't. And finally, I'm going to bring you some PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, or if you're on your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, and here comes the Fredcast. Okay, so let's get right into it. First, let's talk a second about what a Fred is. If you're a longtime cyclist, you've heard the term before, and you're probably thinking, isn't that a derogatory term? Why the heck is this guy calling his podcast the Fredcast? All right, it can be a derogatory term. There's no doubt about it. As a matter of fact, I went online and I checked a cycling glossary, if you will, and they said that a Fred is somebody who spends a lot of money on his bike and on his clothing, but he still can't ride worth a darn. They also called him a poser. All right, I'll admit it. I'm a geek. Whether it's computers or bikes, if it's something that I'm into, I always get enthusiastic about every new product that comes out, and I've got to try it. Does that make me a Fred? I suppose it does. I've got a pretty nice bike. It's got a lot of the latest equipment on it, and I'm constantly upgrading things and just, you know, cheesing after the latest thing that's out there, and I've got to have it. And so maybe that makes me a Fred. Nevertheless, I go on the club rides, I drop people. I do a century, I finish before my friends. So, all right, maybe I'm a little bit of a Fred in the fact that I spend a lot of money, and yeah, I'm never going to be a racer. You're never going to see me in the Tour de France or going up the Alpe d'Huez. At the same time, I'm still a pretty darn good rider. So the purpose of this podcast is for people like me. People who want to know the latest news in cycling, not necessarily about every single race and every single racer and every team, but maybe you just want to know what's new. What's going on this week in cycling? What's the latest product to come out? What's the latest news? And it doesn't necessarily have to be about, like I said, racers. It can be some quirky thing. You'll hear some of that in the news section of today's show. In addition to the news, I'm also going to bring you as many features as I can. Like today, I'm going to review a website that I think you're going to find interesting, and I'm also going to review the Garmin Forerunner, a pretty Fred-like product, if you ask me. I'm also going to try to bring you interviews. I've got some really good ideas of some people that I want to bring on the show that I've always wanted to hear about and people that I think that you're going to find very interesting. And so stand by for that in the next couple of weeks. I'm also going to try to put together a way where we can discuss upcoming rides. I live in Southern California. We have a ton of centuries and double centuries and metric centuries and races, you name it. But I'm not just going to talk about Southern California. I'm going to tell you about rides and races that are coming up in your area, all over the country. And I'm hoping that you are going to interact with me. I want you to tell me what you want this show to be about, because the show isn't for me. It's for you. It's for the listener. So if you're a cyclist and there's something that really you just want to learn about, I will be happy to bring it on the show. There's a lot of different ways that you can interact with me so that we can make sure that that happens. Now, the first way, send me an email. It's pretty simple. TheFredcast@gmail.com. TheFredcast@gmail.com. Another way that you can interact with me is give me a call. I have a voicemail line set up, and I would love to get your audio comments. The voicemail line is area code 206-203-FRED. I think it's pretty easy to remember. 206-203-FRED. And finally, if you're able to, go ahead and send me an audio comment in the email. Again, thefredcast@gmail.com. Also, I hope you'll visit our website. The website is thefredcast.com. That's where you're going to find show notes for every single show, including today's, where I'll give you links to things that I talked about. The other thing that you're going to find there in the next couple of weeks is I'm going to be setting up a forum where Fredcast listeners can go on and talk to each other. Maybe you've got a question, a problem that you've been having, or a hurdle that you've been trying to get over in your training, and you just can't figure out the answer to your question. I'm hoping that you're going to use the forums at thefredcast.com so that you can interact with each other. And I'm going to check those forums. I'll interact with you there. And I'm hoping I'll also get some show ideas from there. And finally, every week at the end of the show, I'm going to play PodSafe cycling music. Because if you're like me, I ride with my iPod, and I can't always listen to a podcast when I'm riding because it just doesn't give me enough motivation to go out there and really go as fast and as hard as I can. So I like to listen to really varied music when I'm riding. And so that's what I'm going to bring you. Every week I'm going to bring you a new song that I think is something that you'll enjoy when you're riding. Okay, so I just want to tell you a little bit about myself so you understand how I became a Fred. First of all, I guess you could call me a former bike industry executive. I worked in the bike industry in the late 80s through the mid 90s. I helped build and establish several very well-known brands of components, and I created marketing, advertising, and promotional programs for lots of others. My first job in the industry, I was working for a company that you wouldn't know, but who has their hands in a lot of different aspects of manufacturing, marketing, and sales. And my first job, my first task when I got to this company, because I was just out of college, I didn't know a great deal about the bike industry. They wanted me to build a bike. For the first month in the industry, my job was read as many back issues of cycling magazines as I could find, and they had a huge library in their conference room. That was all I did all day, read these cycling magazines. And my job was, I was researching parts, components, frame materials to build my first mountain bike. And so at the end of the month, I went to my boss and I presented him with a report. And this report, I don't remember how many pages it was probably 10, 15 pages. And all it was this is the frame I want to buy. This is the handlebar I want to buy. These are the chain ring bolts I'm going to use. I mean, it was all the way down to that kind of detail. And I had to explain why I had chosen the components that I had chosen, how they fit into the budget that I was given, and if I had less money to spend, what my second choice for every single component on that bike would be. And once my boss read the report, he said, "Great, now go buy all those components, buy the tools necessary to build your bike, and for the next couple of weeks, build your bike." And that was my very first job in the bike business. And if you think about it, it was a really great way to become indoctrinated as a Fred. Because here I was, learning about all these components, getting really excited because I'm sort of a techie guy anyway. And I found things that I couldn't afford that I really wanted to have, which I, of course, later went and bought. I found all sorts of less expensive items that were better than some of the more expensive items that I looked at. So if you think about it, this was not only a great introduction to the bike industry, but I guess I have to blame that first employer for my becoming a Fred. So now I had a pretty Fred-worthy bike. It was time to start doing some pretty Fred-worthy things. Part of my job was to go around on the summer weekends to the Norbin National Series events. We'd put up a Easy Up tent, and we put up a banner for our company, and we would demonstrate our products and have giveaways and be there to support our sponsored racers. And so what's the Fred thing to do? I'm at the races. I better start racing. So I became a downhiller. I was never very good at it. I was just in the sport class, had a couple of great crashes, but mostly had a lot of fun. My wife started racing cross country because she was going to these events with me as well, and that just became part of our lives. We were riding on the weekends, we were riding occasionally during the week, and it was just a lot of fun. And especially for somebody who was becoming more and more of a Fred every day, I was getting all sorts of free components, lots of swag when I went to the Interbike Expo. So my bike always was really nice, and I always had some really nice components on it. A few years later, I got an opportunity to go into business with my family in a completely different industry, and I sort of left cycling behind for a period of time. And then about 3.5 years ago, someone in my family was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And I wanted to do something to support them, make them feel that I was trying to help them out through this trying period in their life. And I remembered the MS-150 rides that I'd always heard about, these 150-mile rides that people did to raise money for multiple sclerosis. And so I went and I bought a road bike. It wasn't the highest-end road bike in the world, but it was enough to be able to get me through 150 miles. And I became a roadie. And I remember I was so out of shape after those first rides. I'd do 8 or 10 miles and I'd come home and I'd just die. That was it for me for the rest of the night. I was done. Well, a few months later, there I was doing the MS-150, and I was one of the first people to finish, and I was hooked. It was the first group ride I'd really done in years, and I loved it, and I wanted to do more and more. So I started training for a century, and I did my first century. It was the Palm Springs century, which I'm going to be reviewing in a few months as it gets closer. And once again, I was hooked. I don't know about you, but for me, the adrenaline rush that comes on when I finish one of these group rides, when I've ridden strong, when I'm finishing at the beginning of the pack, it's intoxicating. And so I wanted to do more and more. So this year, my goal was to do 12 centuries. I managed to do 9 because I had a pretty major injury in August after finishing a double metric. And so I feel pretty good about having done the 9. Coming up in 06, planning on doing 12 centuries with at least one or two doubles thrown in. And I'm thinking in 07 of doing a Brevet series so I can do the Paris-Brest-Paris ride. And if you haven't heard about that, I'm going to start talking about Brevets and about that particular ride in future episodes. So that's me. My Freddom has continued. I now have a very high Zoot Italian road frame, Campy components, really nice Mavic Kazerium wheels. I've got all sorts of electronic gizmos on my handlebar. It's very, very Fred-like. So there you go. That's just a little bio of me and how I became a Fred and how my Freddom continues. And it should give you a little bit of insight into some of the topics that we're going to be discussing week after week on the Fredcast. Okay, but enough about me. It's time for the news. First of all, on Friday, the organizers of three of cycling's biggest events, the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, and the Vuelta a España, broke from the UCI, the Union of International Cycling, and left the UCI's Pro Tour circuit. It's a brand new circuit that they started about a year ago to organize the calendar of professional cycling. And basically, the organizers of these three major, major events said, you know what, UCI, your Pro Tour format doesn't work for us. We've been talking to you for months. You haven't listened. We think that it's too restrictive. We think it's too difficult and too expensive for the teams. And we're leaving. We're gone. And so they basically are starting their own association. They feel that the Pro Tour limits their ability to select teams for their races and that it was time for them to break from the Pro Tour. Now, of course, the UCI, for their part, they believe that these three Grand Tours are basically breaking the rules of cycling. But, you know, the Grand Tours, they want to go ahead and they want to make sure that they only have the top teams. They want to make sure that they get the most competitive cyclists, as they put it, the people that are at the top of the cycling pyramid. I can't say I disagree with them. I think that definitely when we watch the Tour de France or we watch the Giro, that we want to see absolutely the world's best cyclists going up against the world's best cyclists. Now, here's the thing. The organizers of these tours have said that it's very expensive for a lot of these teams to attend them. So what they're going to do is they're going to make it easier for the teams to show up. They're going to pay every team that agrees to participate in all three races 100,000 euros. And then for the team that performs the best in the combination of all three, that team's going to end up getting 600,000 euros. That's a pretty good reward for doing well in three races. And it's a good incentive for these teams because it will certainly help defray their costs. Now, in a positive step, another thing that they're going to be doing is they've said, listen, we're tired of all these doping allegations. We're tired of all these things that have occurred this year as far as doping goes. And so any team that has even one member that's found guilty of doping, the entire team will lose all their points. So you basically, guys, you can forget about those 600,000 euros. If you've got one guy who's doping, there's no way that you're ever going to be considered for getting the 600,000 euros. Now, we don't know how long this break or the schism is going to last, but what's interesting is there's rumblings out there that they're going to bring back what they used to call the Grand Tour Trophy, where the team or the individual that did the best in these three grand tours won this trophy. And if they do bring it back, they're talking about a 2 million euro prize. So it's always an interesting year in professional cycling, but I think as far as the grand tours go, 2006 is going to be really, really interesting. Speaking of the grand tours lost one of their most famous participants earlier this week, Charlie Gall, who was a Tour de France champion and a two-time Giro d'Italia winner, died at the age of 72. I think he was just one day short of his 73rd birthday. Charlie was a Belgian rider. He rode in the Tour in the 50s and 60s, and he had the nickname the Angel of the Mountains. He was, believe it or not, the first non-Italian to win the Giro. He won it in 56 and 59, and he won the Tour de France in 1958. He was always known as one of the strongest mountain climbers in the 50s and 60s, and that's where he got his nickname, the Angel of the Mountains. So if there's a tour in heaven, I'm sure Charlie's up there riding it right now. Okay, and my last bit of Grand Tour news for the day, and I know it seems strange to be talking about the Grand Tours in December. Ivan Basso announced this week that he decided that he's going to ride not only the Tour de France, but also the Giro d'Italia, and he's going to try to win both. Now, you may know that Jan Ullrich also announced a few weeks ago that he was going to ride not only the Tour, but also the Giro. But it's a little bit more special for Basso because he's an Italian. So the Giro has, according to him, a great emotional value. And if he can win the Giro, it'll mean a lot to him as an Italian. And if he can then go on and win the Tour, obviously, that really would just show his dominance over the sport this year. And he would really become the first person, if he can do it, to win both the Giro and the Tour in the same year since Marco Pantani did it back in 98. Personally, I think it's fantastic to see these riders wanting to ride and focus on more than just one event. If there's anything that negative, perhaps, that I might say about Lance as far as his dominance of the Tour, there's no doubt that for 7 years he just dominated that race. But there's a lot of people who say, well, he did, but at the same time, he wasn't participating in a lot of the other tours and a lot of the other races that more rank and file riders were participating in, because Lance really only focused on the Tour. So it is kind of refreshing to see guys like Ullrich and Basso coming out now and saying, you know what, we're not just focusing on the Tour, we're going to go out and we're going to ride more events and we're going to try to win more events. So I think that's fantastic, and I think not only is it good for the sport, but it's also good for the competition. So I know I said it before, but I just think that this really bodes well for just a really exciting and a really fantastic Grand Tour season. Meanwhile, here in the U.S., we are preparing for a Grand Tour of our own. Coming up in February, February 19th through the 26th to be exact, in California, is going to be the Amgen Tour of California. It starts in San Francisco, winds its way down the coast all the way to Redondo Beach here in Southern California. And what's great about this is, sure, we have all sorts of pro events around the United States, but this one is really going to feature some of the top teams in cycling. Discovery is going to be there, T-Mobile, Phonak, Gerolsteiner, HealthNet, Davidamont. You're going to see some of the top teams in cycling, some of the top cyclists in the world coming to California, participating in a stage race, grand tour kind of event. All right, it's not 3 weeks, but we'll get there. And I really think that it's going to give a big boost to American cycling. I'm going to post a link to the website in the show notes so that you can go there and check it out and sign up for updates so that you can be the first one to hear the latest news about the Tour of California. I'm going to keep you updated here on the Fredcast, but for now, just go to the website and check it out. It is really going to be exciting to have a race like this back in the United States once again. Okay, and a little bit of mountain biking news. USA Cycling has finally released the 2006 National Mountain Bike Series schedule. This year, we're looking at six events around the country, April 22nd to the 23rd at Frank G. Benelli Regional Park here in Southern California, San Dimas to be exact, June 10th through the 11th at Sugar Mountain Resort in Banner Elk, North Carolina, June 17th through the 18th, Mount Snow, up in Vermont, July 8th through 9th, Deer Valley, Park City, Utah, August 5th through 6th, Brianhead Resort in Brianhead, Utah. And the final race of the season, August 12th through the 13th at Snowmass in Aspen. These are the events where you find the top mountain bikers in the world coming together to race the National Mountain Bike Series. They're always really, really good events. And I have to tell you, from having traveled around as my job from event to event every year, if you're anywhere within a couple hundred miles of these events and you have any interest at all in mountain biking, you really need to go. You're going to not only see some of the top athletes in the world racing, but you're also going to see some of the most amazing products. And it's a great way to see some of the newest technology that is going to be available for your bike over the next few years. So I really encourage you to go out if you're anywhere near any of these events and check them out. Well, if you're at all like me and you like to participate in centuries and other kinds of group rides every year, this story is probably going to be one that you're going to want to watch like I am. A couple of weeks ago, the Colorado State Patrol, basically their highway patrol there in Colorado, came out with a decision, really without consulting with cycling groups or ride directors. And the decision was that from that point forward, any bicycle tour or any group ride in Colorado was going to be limited to no more than 2,500 cyclists. Now, the rationale for this was that it's their belief that in order for a ride to be safe, they need to assign one motorcycle officer for every 300 cyclists out there on the road. And based on their current staffing and budgeting, they can only afford to spare 8 motorcycle policemen or women on any given day. Now, with this in mind, therefore, the 2,500 cap, you can imagine what happened in Colorado. There was a huge outcry against this, and a number of groups organized a petition drive, and they got over 10,000 signatures in literally just a couple of days, begging and pleading for the Colorado State Patrol to reverse their decision. And what ended up happening was about a few days later, the Colorado State Patrol decided to delay the implementation of this new rule for a year while they discussed further with ride directors and with cyclists. And they said that they were really going to watch the rides in 2006 and see how things went. The problem was that there are just a lot of complaints from the community when we go out and we do these rides. One person called the Colorado State Patrol and said, "Hey, I'm tired of cyclists using my front lawn as a restroom." Well, quite frankly, I can't blame that person. I wouldn't like that very much, and neither would you. So basically, the moral of the story is this. When you're doing one of these group rides, follow the rules of the road. Don't ride 5 abreast. Try to ride single file. Call out on your left. Stop at stop signs. Stop at stoplights. If we can show that we can be good cycling citizens, I don't think that this is a trend that will sweep the country. But if we continue to do those things that we all see on every one of the group rides that we do, and if the trend toward worse behavior continues, then I think that this is something that is going to sweep the nation. Imagine the effect that this could have on a lot of the group rides that we do, whether they're fun rides, or I can think of, for instance, the BP MS-150 down in Texas. They get 10,000 riders, and they raise millions and millions of dollars for a very good cause. Now imagine if they were limited to only 2,500, what that would do not only to the scope and the fun of the event, but also what it would do for the number of donations that they get. So I guess the bottom line is we have to be vigilant. We have to watch for these things, and I'm certainly going to do that. And any update on this, I'll report here on the Fredcast. But at the same time, we really, really have to be good cycling citizens. So keep that in mind, and I will definitely keep you updated on this story. Okay, if you're a member of a club or maybe an officer of a club, this is a story that's definitely going to interest you. USA Cycling is welcoming applications once again for Club of the Year. 10 cycling clubs in the U.S. are going to be recognized for excellence in 3 overall divisions and 7 special categories. Decisions are going to be based on the amount of events that your club has held, any outstanding competitive results that you've had, clinics and seminars that you've had to benefit member education and community-related charitable events. Winners are going to receive free renewal for their club, as well as a plaque from USA Cycling. The application and points criteria for Club of the Year are online, and you can go to USA Cycling's website or just go to thefredcast.com, and I will put a link into the show notes. And finally, a piece of news that proves that even bike thieves can be Freds. It appears that a man in Shanghai had his bike stolen recently. 20 hours later, the bike showed up again at his house. Only difference was, this time there was a note attached. The note said, "You should buy a new bike." The owner, a gentleman by the name of Chi, said he was devastated when the bike vanished because he had spent a month's salary buying it 20 years ago and he always treated it carefully. But when he came out of his house, he found the bike back with the note attached. And Chi said, the bike works well because I always maintain it. His neighbor said, at least the thief had a sense of humor. Personally, I think the guy was just a Fred. And that's going to do it for the news for today. Okay, so it's that time of year. It's getting dark way too early. It's getting way too cold. And sometimes you just can't get on your bike and go riding outside. So your only choice in those circumstances are get out the rollers, get out the trainer, and start sweating inside. I don't know about you, but training inside can get kind of boring, and I'm always looking for new tips and techniques and DVDs and things like that to make my indoor training go by faster, make it a lot more efficient, so that I get the workout that I need when I'm training indoors. And so I was searching around on the internet, and I found a Yahoo group called Bicycle Trainer Support. Now, if you don't know what a Yahoo group is, it's basically like a little online community where people share tips and tricks and exchange messages, ask questions, get answers. And this particular group is described as a support group basically to assist people on indoor training or using stationary bikes or spinning or whatever techniques they have for indoor training. Basically, on the Yahoo group, they discuss motivation, training hours, problems, techniques, various aids for your training, such as CDs and DVDs and videotapes, and basically just it's a place where people can discuss their successes and their challenges. It's open to anyone. It's free to join. And as of today, there's about 80 members, and it's been growing really, really fast. Basically, I watched it from the time that Daylight Savings Time ended until now, and it's really starting to grow a lot faster. So how do you find it? Number one, check the show notes. I'm going to put a link to the group into the show notes. Or go to groups.yahoo.com. And once there, you're going to see a find a group search area. Just type in bicycle trainer, click search, and only one result is going to come up. And that's going to be the one you want. Click on the name of the group, and you're going to be there. Now, at this point, you'll be able to browse the messages, but you won't be able to write messages or respond to postings, and you won't be able to see any other content. In order to do those things, you have to join. And this is a pretty easy process. If you already have a Yahoo ID, you click in, you put in your Yahoo ID, you put in your password, and you tell them that you want to join the group, set a couple of preferences, and you're in. If you don't have a Yahoo ID, don't worry about it. It's free. It's very easy to join, and it's a very easy step-by-step process to go through. Now, once you do become a member, place that you're going to want to head to right away is the message area, and this really is the heart of the group. As a matter of fact, it's the heart of any group for that matter. Even with only 80 members, I found the group to be extremely active, especially since winter is here and people are riding indoors. You're going to find messages on techniques, nutrition, heart rate monitors, setup, computers, rollers, everything that you can imagine that has to do with training indoors, you're going to find it on the message area. It really seems to me that anytime anybody asks a question, it gets answered by multiple people. And the answers are usually pretty complete and pretty thoughtful. I've used it myself. I got pretty good answers to my question. So I think that you should find it pretty useful for you. In addition to the message area, you're also going to find a database. Somebody went in there and set up a database for people to post their weekly training logs. And right now, there's not that many people posting. But if we can get more members on the site, we can get more people posting, I think that it's going to be really good for, you know, that sort of peer pressure. You can see how much you're doing as opposed to how much other people are doing. And hopefully that's going to motivate you and motivate others to get out and pull out that trainer and do a little bit more riding. Other areas of the site include a files area, and that's where people have placed reviews of various indoor training videos and DVDs. I've also seen a pretty good training log there that you can download to your computer. It opens up in Excel, and you can use that to track your own personal progress. And there's a bunch of other files there as well that you'll probably find interesting. There's a links area, and actually it's a pretty nice set of links that give a variety of places on the web where you can find more info on trainers and on indoor training. There's a photos area where people have been posting photos of their various bikes, either on and off their trainers, photos of their workout rooms. That's pretty interesting to look at. And then finally, there are a number of polls. And currently there are polls that ask where you ride, what you ride, your max heart rate, your resting heart rate, video use you use, things like that. And it's pretty interesting. I went on and I answered all the questions before I looked at what other people's answers were. And it was really interesting to me to see where I stacked up against the other people on the group. So how do I use the site? Well, personally, I have my preferences set up so that I can get an email digest of the messages every day. And basically what a digest is it takes every single message that was sent in a 24-hour period and it emails them all to you in one email so you can look at them all in chronological order. I have to tell you, every day there's usually some tidbit of information that I can use in my daily training or which leads me somewhere on the internet for more information that maybe I didn't already have. So if you are training indoors, even if it's just once a week, I'd really recommend that you go to the Yahoo group, check it out, maybe sign up for the digest, and also participate in the discussion, because the more people that are on there, the more people that are asking questions and answering questions, the more beneficial it's going to be for everybody. So in true Fred fashion, I'm definitely what you would call an early adopter. When something new comes out, I've got to try it, especially if it's a gadget or a gizmo or a really lightweight component, I want to have it. So you can imagine in the late 80s, when digital cycle computers first came out, I had to have one. And if you remember back then, they had the wire that had to go down your brake cable in order to attach to the sensor on your front fork. Then wireless cycle computers came out. I had to have one of those too. Who needed wires when it could all be wireless? And I thought that was really cool. Well, now the latest handlebar gadget is a GPS unit. Now, if you're not familiar with what GPS is, and if you're a Fred, I have a feeling you are, but bear with me here for a second. A GPS is really no more than a radio receiver with a little computer built in. That radio receiver listens to a constellation of satellites that the military originally put up just for military use. Those satellites are constantly sending out position data, and the little computer in the GPS unit interprets that data, runs some calculations, and determines your location virtually anywhere on the Earth. I've personally tried GPS in the South Pacific. I've tried it all over North America. I've tried it in Europe. Every place I've been, it's worked flawlessly. And now, thanks to a decision that President Clinton made a number of years ago, the military turned off their fuzzing up of the signal. It used to be that the military had the signal such that it wasn't incredibly accurate, so that an enemy nation couldn't use it to target a missile against us. Well, President Clinton turned off selective availability, and all of a sudden the signal was incredibly accurate, even to recreational users. It spawned all sorts of different outdoor activities that weren't possible before. One of them is geocaching, which is a electronic treasure hunt where you go out and you find little trinkets hidden virtually everywhere. And parenthetically, you can find that at geocaching.com. Well, now that selective availability is turned off, all sorts of options are also opened up to cyclists. So for a long time, people like me would take a handheld GPS unit, which was handheld but not very lightweight, put it into our jersey pocket and ride around with it. And then at the end of the ride, we'd have an extremely accurate history of where we had been, how long it took us to get there, what our mileage was. We could download it into our computer, and if we were really geeky enough, we could probably make a map out of it. But this really wasn't a very good solution for cyclists. These GPS units were kind of bulky, and having them sticking out of your jersey pocket really wasn't very comfortable. Well, a company called Garmin came along, and Garmin is one of the world's leading developers of GPS units, both for personal use as well as professional use. And they realized that there was some potential here, and they came out with a line of units that they called the Forerunner. And there's the 101, the 201, and the 301, but it was the 301 that really caught my eye. And so I dropped a number of hints, and sure enough, when my birthday came around in July, my wife and kids bought me a Garmin Forerunner 301. And that is the unit that I'm going to be reviewing today. So first, let's talk a little bit about what comes in the box when you buy a 301. Well, first of all, the GPS unit itself comes in the box. You'll also find a heart rate monitor strap. There's a CD-ROM containing Garmin's Training Center software. There's a wrist strap because the Forerunner is also developed for runners, hence the name. There's also an AC charger, so you can plug it into the wall because it has rechargeable batteries. There's a PC USB interface cable, and then, of course, the obligatory manuals. Well, the first thing I noticed is that right out of the box, the Forerunner 301 is really not suited immediately for using on a bike. It does not come with a handlebar mount, and so I actually had to buy one separately. Otherwise, I would have had to sort of strap it to my handlebars with the included Velcro wrist strap, but that really isn't secure enough, nor is it really conducive to being able to view what's on the screen because the thing just sort of flops around on the handlebar. So the first thing I had to do was go out and buy a handlebar mount. Now, once I bought that handlebar mount and put it on my bike, I was literally ready to go riding. Because, you see, the GPS doesn't require any calibration like a standard cycle computer. So you remember the last time you installed a cycle computer or you changed the batteries in your cycle computer, you had to go through that whole arcane step-by-step process of calibrating it and entering in that secret code for your bike. With a GPS unit, you don't have to do that. You're ready to go riding immediately. Okay, so what makes a Garmin Forerunner similar to a cycle computer, and what makes it different? Well, number one, just like any cycle computer, it's constantly monitoring your time, your speed, and your distance, as well as a maximum speed and an average speed. But right there, that's where the similarities end. And here's where the differences begin. Yes, it has a heart rate monitor, and just like a lot of other heart rate monitors, it is constantly storing your heart rate data as you ride. Difference is going to come in later when we hook it up to our computer. Well, what else is it doing? It's also recording your altitude so that as you go along, it constantly knows what your altitude is and it's storing that information again for later use. Of course, it's also nice to look at on your screen so that when you're at the bottom of that hill and you see what your altitude is and you're at the top of that hill and you see what your altitude is, you get sort of a sense of accomplishment. Another thing that it tracks is the number of calories that you've burned. This is a little buggy in my opinion. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Another thing that it's able to do that a regular cycle computer can't do is you can set up training for yourself before you go out on your ride so that it works like a virtual coach. So if you want to do intervals, it already has set interval training programs that it will put you through while you're on your ride. Or before you go on your ride, you can set up custom interval training and it will take you through your custom workout. Another thing you can do is you can set up a pace. Maybe you are challenging yourself. Maybe right now your average speed is 17 miles an hour, but you want to work up so that your average speed is 18 miles an hour, 20 miles an hour. Well, it'll set up a virtual riding partner for you so that it's constantly showing you how your pace is against your virtual riding partner, whether you're ahead, and if so, how much, if you're behind, how much. And that can be really, really useful when your buddies just aren't around to challenge you and you want to be challenged on a ride all by yourself. Now, in addition to all of these time, speed, and distance functions, it's also a GPS. So just like on the dashboard of your car where it can say turn right on Main Street and turn left on Elm Street, the Forerunner 301 can do something very similar. With Garmin's MapSource software, you can actually load up a map of your local town, and right there at home on your computer, you can click every place that you want to go, and the software will automatically route you from point A to point B, and then you can download that into your Forerunner 301. And when you go out on a ride, it's like having a virtual route sheet. Think about it. The last time you did a Century or any other organized ride, somebody handed you a piece of paper. And on that piece of paper, it said, Elm Street, 0 miles, turn right. Main Street, 1.1 miles, turn left. The Garmin 301 does that for you. And so you look down at your screen, and there's a little arrow. And as you get close to making a turn, the arrow changes to show you the direction of your turn. And as you're getting closer, it counts down the distance until it's time for that turn, and it shows you where to go and when to go there. Now, this can also be useful if you've taken a route, you didn't quite know where you were going, but you found your way, and you want to do the same route again. You can have the Garmin Forerunner 301 loaded up with that same route, and you can go do it backwards or forwards, and you can tell it whether you want to go in reverse direction or forward direction, and you can run that exact same route again simply by following the arrows that it's going to present to you on its screen. And if you're a mountain biker and you're out there in the middle of a single track and you're worried about getting lost, you can set a starting point before you get going, before you leave your car and get on the trail, and then it'll sort of put down virtual breadcrumbs. And when you get lost, which I hope you won't do, but if you do get lost, you should be able to follow those virtual breadcrumbs all the way back to your original starting point. Now, as I mentioned before, one of the great things about using a GPS over a cycle computer is the fact that it's constantly storing the data while you're doing a ride or while you're doing a workout. Garmin includes their Training Center software, which you put into your PC, you hook the GPS up to your PC when you're back from a ride, and you upload all that data into the PC, and then you can view at various points in your ride, or at all points in your ride, what your heart rate was going on, what your speed was, and you can start analyzing your performance. Now, personally, I didn't find the Training Center software to be quite as sophisticated enough for me to get a lot of information out of it. One of the problems that I found was it didn't correspond to a map. So that, for instance, if I knew that in one part of my ride I was probably in some hills, or maybe I was in an area where there weren't a lot of stoplights and I wanted to see what my performance was there, I really couldn't see that. Garmin probably anticipated that because they included information in the package for two different online training sites. One is called motionbased.com and the other is trainingpeaks.com. Now, I tried them both, and the one that I settled on was motionbased, which coincidentally Garmin purchased about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and now it's part of Garmin, although it's still called motionbased.com, and they're still supporting a wide variety of GPS units from other manufacturers. Nevertheless, what I like about it is that when you upload your data to motionbased, you can see your specific route on a wide variety of different maps. They could be satellite maps, or they could just be regular street maps. But the nice thing is you can see it on the map and you can click around, and as you click around, you can see what your speed was at each individual point, what your heart rate was, what the elevation was, and then it gives you a wide variety of performance analysis tools so you can see what your average heart rate was, but you can also see what your heart rate was at the top of the mountain, at the bottom of the mountain. You can see what your speed was, and it's all right there in graphic detail online. And even better, you have the ability of saving all of that data on motion-based site and sharing it with other users. Now, why would you do that? Well, one reason is because if you're sharing your data, other people are sharing theirs. So let's say, for instance, and I've done this, you're traveling. You go into a town, you're not familiar with it, you brought your bike or you're renting one there, but you just don't know where to go. No problem. Just go to motion-based, put in the location of where you are, run a search, and it's going to show you a large number of training routes that other people have used, including comments, so you can decide how far you want to go, how much climbing you want to do. You can see what the elevation gain is before you even get on your bike. Upload that into your Forerunner 301, go for a ride, and just follow the arrows. That right there is the reason why I prefer to ride with a GPS rather than a cycle computer. Okay, so what's my bottom line? Would I recommend it? Would I not recommend it? Well, first, let me give you my pros and cons. First, on the pro side, I really like the fact that I can get accurate mileage, speed, and elevation gain information, especially without having to do calibration. That means I can take this unit from bike to bike, have a cumulative history of the number of miles that I've ridden, and I don't have to do any calibration. I also like the virtual route sheet functions, the ability to follow on my computer, on my handlebars, without having to bring slips of paper, without having to do a lot of advanced planning. Along with that, the ability to store my routes to a computer, to do sophisticated analysis of my performance, and the ability to download other people's routes right into the unit, especially for areas that I'm unfamiliar with. I like the rechargeable batteries. I've found that they have very, very long life, probably somewhere in the range of Garmin's estimated battery life information. I like the auto pause function so that when I get below a set speed, be it 5 miles an hour, 4 miles an hour, 3 miles an hour, it automatically pauses, and so that I have very accurate distance and speed information at the end of a ride. But here come my cons. And the first one, for me, this is a biggie. It's not Mac compatible. That means when I want to connect it to a computer, I'm going into my daughter's room, I'm bugging her, and I'm tying up her computer because she has a PC. Now, I have to tell you, again, being a geek, I've run into a lot of hardware and software that's supposedly not Mac compatible. And 99 times out of 100, I can figure out a hack and a way to make it work on my Mac. This is the one time out of 100 where it is absolutely impossible. And Garmin's this way with all of their products. And I wish that they would realize that a lot of us geeks out here are also Mac users. Another thing that I don't like about it is the calorie function. I thought it would be really neat while I was riding to be able to watch those calories tick away. Here's the problem. I think this is more of a function that was intended for the runners who are going to use this product, because I notice that if I'm going up a very steep hill and I am working my tail off, my heart rate is way up there, and I can watch the elevation gain ticking up as I'm going up this hill, the calorie information hardly changes. But then when I start going down that hill and I'm going 40, 45 miles an hour and I'm not working at all, I watch the calorie numbers go up and up and up and up. The other thing that I've noticed is I can pretty much always figure when I've gone about 16 miles. Why? Because if I'm looking at the calorie information, I get to 1,000 calories. So it seems to me that Garmin has not put in a very sophisticated algorithm to calculate the number of calories you burned. It would seem to me that if they know you're on a bike, and by the way, you tell the unit that you're on a bike, and it can see your elevation going up, it can see you moving slowly, and it can also see your heart rate going through the roof, there should be an algorithm in there that takes those pieces of information and realizes that you're working much, much harder than the opposite when you're going down that hill and not working at all. Now, along those lines, I think if it had a cadence function, which it doesn't have, then it could also take that information and put it into its algorithm, and it could figure out how hard you were working. Now, the lack of a cadence function means that on my handlebars, I have two units. I have the Garmin unit, and then I have my normal Mavic cycling computer. So again, it makes my handlebars pretty congested. A minor issue, but on the heart rate, it doesn't give you the percent of your max heart rate like a lot of other heart rate monitors do. It gives you heart rate zones. So you have to remember, if I'm in zone 4, what percent of my max heart rate is that? And that's a little bit confusing when you're getting a little oxygen deprived on your way up some really long climb. Also on the heart rate, I found that the heart rate monitor strap is not as sensitive as a lot of the heart rate monitor straps that you get from dedicated heart rate monitor companies, say brand P, for instance. I know with my Polar heart rate monitor, I can put that strap anywhere from my neck down to my belly button, and I'm going to get an accurate reading. But with the Garmin, I find that I have to put it almost below my rib cage, on my stomach, where it's uncomfortable to breathe with it being that tight on there, in order for it to get an accurate reading. And I'm hoping that on future versions that they're going to make the heart rate monitor much more sensitive. And then finally, and I mentioned it before, there's no bike mount in the box. And I think that it would be an inexpensive add-on to just put it in the box so that it's more worthwhile for cyclists right out of the box. At the end of the day, would I recommend the Forerunner 301? Absolutely, I would. If you are a geek like me and you crave information and you like the ability to have the virtual partner, to have the training programs built in, to be able to analyze your heart rate and performance data on a screen, to be able to download other people's routes and use those when you're in an unfamiliar area, absolutely, I would recommend it. But before you add it to your Christmas list, I think you should take a look at Garmin's website. I'm going to put the links in the show notes, because in early January, they're coming out with a dedicated cycling version of a GPS, and it's called the Garmin Edge. I have to be honest with you. My plan is, when the Edge comes out, to put my Forerunner on eBay and buy the Edge. And the reason for that is it's a smaller unit, it has cycling-specific functions, and most importantly, it includes a cadence monitor, so I'll be able to track my cadence and my heart rate and all of the other cycling data, get the virtual breadcrumbs, save the routes, put routes into it, all the things I talked about, but in a dedicated cycling unit. So if you're looking for something right now and you just absolutely have to put a GPS on your bike, by all means, go for the 301. If you also cross train, maybe you're also a runner, then by all means, get the 301. But if you're only a cyclist and you just want it for cycling, I think my recommendation would be to wait a month or two and buy the Edge. Now, in case you're wondering, the suggested retail price of the Forerunner 301 is $325. I found it online at a site called gpscity.com with a street price of somewhere in the range of about $220. And I'll put a link to GPS City in the show notes as well. So that's going to do it for this first episode of the Fredcast. I really want to thank you for listening. I hope you've subscribed. Send me feedback, thefredcast@gmail.com. You can send me a voicemail at area code 206-203-FRED. Send me an audio comment in the email. Check the website, thefredcast.com. And if you like what you heard, please tell your friends and tell them to subscribe as well. Well, that's going to do it for the first episode of the Fredcast. Again, thank you for listening. Coming up is some PodSafe cycling music. The name of the song is Psychosis by DJ Top Shelf, and it's from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. That's going to do it for today. Enjoy the music, and now get out there and enjoy the ride.